time for hour number two of the Bible study. I'm Chuck Rathert. By the way, my email address is first initial last name, C-R-A-T-H-E-R-T, at KFUO.org. If you have a question that you would like me to bring to Ask the Pastor, just email it to me. What I like to do then, if we get that question on the air, is I'll respond to your email and tell you where we address the question so that you can go to the archive if you didn't have a chance to listen and get the answer you're looking for. C. Rathert at KFUO.org. We say good morning and welcome to Pastor Richard Moore, our good friend. He used to be at Emmanuel Chapel here in North St. Louis County, but now holds forth at St. Martin Lutheran Church in Winona, Minnesota, and has been there for, I don't know, about a year or two, I guess.
2 years in August.
2 years in August. How time flies.
Doesn't it, though?
How's your family?
My family's doing okay. We're doing okay.
I know your wife had some health issues. She was having some back issues and, what, migraine or something?
Migraines,
like that.
Yeah.
How has the state of Minnesota been in terms of weather on those things?
Well, migraines are a little bit better. Unfortunately, they're not gone, but there have been some benefits to being in the state of Minnesota and out of the state of Missouri.
And out of the state of humidity?
Yes. There's more than a little truth to that.
And you have a daughter who is a, can we say, professional dancer? Is that a way to describe it?
We could say she's a professional dance teacher now.
Oh, really?
She graduated in June with her Bachelor of Arts in Ballet Pedagogy. And
pedagogy?
She has been, yeah, that's the teaching of ballet.
We don't like a lot of big words here on the Bible
study. I understand. But she has been hired by the Minnesota Conservatory of the Arts here in Winona to teach ballet, and also as an adjunct professor teaching ballet at St. Mary's University here in Winona.
So she's busy.
Yeah.
Does she get a chance to dance?
No, she gets a chance to do a lot of teaching.
A lot of teaching.
And but she will not be performing. She had surgery less than a month ago, so it'll be a while before she can dance.
Well, sir, thank you for giving up an hour of your busy day here for some Ask the Pastor dialogue. Our telephone numbers, for those of you who would like to give us a call, and you can set the table, go in whatever direction you prefer, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I never thought that we would get to the day where we were talking about this next subject here that I want to raise with you, but this is a story out of the Denver Post, and let me just read a few paragraphs here. Matthew Murray's assault on New Life Church in Colorado Springs and the Youth with a Mission campus in Arvada in December has made worshipers more likely to carry guns, according to speakers at a church security workshop. But without a security plan, guns and people can be a dangerous mix, speakers told a dozen representatives of the metro area churches at the Heritage Christian Center in East Denver on Thursday. That would have been last week. After Murray killed two in Arvada and two more in Colorado Springs, he was wounded by a New Life security officer, then shot himself as he lay dying with three guns and 1,000 rounds of ammunition strapped to his body. The megachurch's security staff still had more guns to deal with, according to John Casey, who was in charge of security at New Life that Sunday. A church member ran up and grabbed one of Murray's pistols after earlier trying to lift a weapon off a security officer to shoot it out with the gunman. Within minutes after the shooting started, other church members rushed to their cars and returned with guns. While security and police were still determining whether there were more gunmen. Sometimes in a very stressful situation, you may have to have more to deal with than just the person you thought you had to deal with, according to Casey. Did you ever think we'd see this day, Pastor Moore?
No, you know, it's sort of sad that one would feel necessary to carry a gun into church to begin with, much less to have a situation end up like that.
Are you aware of anybody packing heat there at St. Martin Lutheran Church in Winona, Minnesota?
I'm not aware of it, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Why do you say that?
Because we are in a hunting and farming community.
Yeah.
it's not uncommon, for instance, for there to be a
So you got parishioners sitting there in the pews with rifles across their laps, do you?
No, but I have had parishioners come into church and tell me that while they were out taking their morning walk, they were greeted by a black bear.
Really?
Yeah.
Those are supposed to be in Chicago.
No, not the Chicago Bears.
Wow.
We're talking the ones that, you know, if you make more noise than they do, they get scared and run away, thank God.
Given the fact...
But so it's not uncommon for people to have guns up here, but it's not for, they're not carrying them for protection there. I don't know of anyone who carries, like, a pistol or anything other than the police.
Well, this is going to be pretty soon, this is going to be like the Wild West. Pretty soon we're all going to be sitting there in our pews with our gun belts strapped around our waist there and our six shooters at our side. And I mean, you know, that's the way it used to be. At least that's what the movies depicted as having been. People carry guns.
I think we're failing to realize that we're supposed to be trusting in God to be our protection.
Well, you trust in God, Pastor. I'm going to carry a .38, okay?
We'll see who lives for the next 10 years, okay?
Probably. But there is another serious question here. I'm sure that the Virginia Tech campus never expected what happened there in a murder rampage to happen, or the mall that was up in the Chicago area, what happened there.
But having 6 or 7 or 8 or maybe 20 or 50 people with a gun who truly are not trained to respond in emergencies would have meant more dead people.
Well, conceal and carry is supposed to mean, anyway. I know that having a driver's license doesn't necessarily mean you can drive either, but carrying a concealed weapon is supposed to mean that you've demonstrated, you know, some training.
Right. Training with the gun.
Training with the gun, yeah.
Which is different than training to respond in an emergency situation where there's someone who is not thinking clearly with another gun in another place. See, personally, I think when you add, I am not opposed to guns. People who are trained and know what they're doing with guns and want to own a gun and have it in their house and want to go hunting, I'm okay with that personally. I don't think there's anything in Scripture that says that's wrong. But when my stated purpose is I who, let's face it, do not get up every day and make sure that I have been retrained and I'm thinking, how do I respond if a terrorist does this or if someone pulls a gun today, who went through a 20-minute or maybe a 2-hour or maybe a 2-week course on gun safety before being allowed to carry this gun, this is not the person I want whipping out a pistol to have a gunfight with someone else who has another gun while I'm in the room?
Well,
you know, excuse me.
I know it's crazy.
I'll take my chance hitting the floor and believe that if I'm supposed to die, I'm going to anyway. I don't necessarily really want someone jumping to my defense who is clueless.
Well, you know, Pastor, if your life is in danger, you might want a clueless person jumping to your defense.
Why? So they can shoot me trying to protect me?
As opposed to nobody jumping to your defense, so you get shot and killed.
You know something? If the Lord is going to call me home on that day and he chooses to do it and allow it to happen through a gunshot, I'll see you in heaven.
Wow. There are not a lot of people, I got a feeling there are not a lot of people who are quite ready to stand shoulder to shoulder with you on that one. I'm sure that there are a lot of people listening to us who feel fairly confident that if such a grisly thing were to happen, and it has happened, so nobody can say anymore that this would never happen, that they wouldn't be in heaven with you on that day. But most of them are thinking, you know what, I still got some things to do here, and I just as soon somebody kill that gun-wielding rascal than take me to heaven on that particular given day. But not you.
However,
yeah.
If the Lord, okay, do we believe that the days of our lives are written in the Lord's book of life?
Absolutely.
So, if God has determined I'm going to die tomorrow, do I really care whether I'm hit by a Mack truck, have a massive heart attack, have a stroke, or get shot?
No, you don't, but you're not going to go walking down the middle of the interstate making trucks dodge you.
Exactly, but not carrying a gun when I am poorly prepared to have one, okay? It's not the same as walking down the middle of the interstate. In fact, I would argue that carrying a gun when I am not truly prepared or trained to use it well for the defense of others is closer to my walking down the middle of the interstate. All of the statistics show that people who are minimally trained minimally trained. I'm not talking about people who know what they're doing. People who are minimally trained or who were trained 20 years ago and haven't really done anything with their gun but now have one, those people, when they get into these situations, end up dead more often because they had the gun than the people who were standing there without one.
As the pastor, I realize that you're not responsible for every administrative thing that happens at your church. You probably have a church council or a church board to handle a lot of those questions. Do you feel any sense of responsibility as the pastor these days, knowing how violent some of our culture has become, to ask yourself the question or ask your church council, should we have a security plan? Should we have at least one person that we know is in the building with a weapon, somebody who is trained, not Pastor Moore, not Chuck Rathard, you know, goofballs with guns, but somebody who knows what they're doing? Should we take the step, the planning step, to have at least one person like that in every worship service?
Well, since I am about to encourage anyone who wants to go someplace to come to Winona, I'll say this, okay? You ready?
Yeah.
No, I feel no compulsion to do that at this time. We have a security plan. It has something to do with locks.
Yeah. You know, I...
Okay.
And I agree with you. And, you know, I agree with you, and I'm not going to quarrel with you, but there's something telling me that I'm being a little cavalier there, that I'm not being perhaps as responsible as I ought to be. That's probably the way I would go. I don't disagree with you, but I'm not...
Here's my problem with doing anything else. If you look at the percentage of time, then just statistically, look at the number of churches there are, the number of services held in those churches, the number of people who come to those churches in those services, and then you look at the number of times there is anything like the type of incident that you told us about at the opening of the show. The percentage of something happening is so far below 1% that it is truly an aberration. Okay?
Yeah.
The reason it doesn't seem like one is because the event that happened in Columbine, and how many years ago now was that?
10 maybe.
Okay. Still seems like yesterday because we see it on the news still.
Well, let's not talk about Columbine. Let's talk about Virginia Tech. That is
okay.
But
my point is, Columbine, when Virginia Tech happens, they show you
Columbine
as though yesterday was Columbine, today's Virginia Tech. There were 10 years between those two. You know what I'm saying? I can make it seem like this is a crisis because I can string together these aberrations, these flare-ups that happened, these individual things that happened 15, 10 years apart, 5 years apart.
Well, I get the point.
And make it seem like there's a growing tide.
Pastor, there is a growing tide.
I'm not sure I agree with you.
I'm not here to say that we're about to be overwhelmed by it, but there is a growing tide.
Is it a growing tide, or are we just more aware of every time it happens somewhere?
I comb the internet. I look at multiple websites in order to identify issues that we can discuss here on this program.
Uh-huh.
And I see,
and you're making my point.
I see the headlines, and
ten years ago. If those headlines were happening someplace halfway around the world or someplace as far away as, let's say, Colorado, it would have been a one-day thing, and you wouldn't have seen it. But we have the ability to see the news from every little corner of the earth. So when something happens that we would have never heard about, when you and I were growing up back in the dark ages before the internet, for it to get national press meant it was a major thing. With the internet and the rise of all the cable news and everything, we give national press to really unimportant things. And we sensationalize them as much as possible. I'm not sure the world's any more evil today than it was 20 years ago or 40 years ago. I am positive I'm more aware of the evil because
you are,
it is out there.
You are absolutely correct, and I wouldn't argue against that point. I think that point is absolutely correct. But I do think we are in the midst of a cultural decline, and I do think there's more violence, and I do think there's more decadence. And it may be magnified because of technology and the ability to communicate it. But
it's taught because of technology.
It may be a self-fulfilling kind of a prophecy. You're right.
Yeah. Well, I'm serious. If someone who is sort of on the edge didn't hear about all these bizarre things that people are doing and think, oh, I could try that. I really believe that we teach people how to be deviant.
All I got to do is pick up Grand Theft Auto and put it in your PlayStation there, and you'll learn some things about being deviant. All right, let me continue reading this story here. A little editorial comment in there. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
By the way, this was written by a guy by the name of Joey Bunch for the Denver Post. Continuing in his article here, he says, the El Paso County Sheriff's Office saw a surge in concealed weapons permits after the New Life shooting, and the National Association of Church and School Security was born at the church to help others prepare. Tim Preby, a New Life member and former San Diego police officer, said the church received hundreds of requests from congregations spooked by the incident. Apparently not St. Martin Winona, though. Everybody wants ninjas in the church and snipers on the roof, he said. But while megachurches can afford armed security teams, every church can develop a plan to deal with hazards, according to the speakers at this conference. We can do that, Billy Ray, a member of the 300-member Trinity Springs Church in Elbert County, said of a hazard plan. But we can't have guns in our church. We can't post an armed guard at the door. Police officers in the congregation are a good place to start in forming hazard plans and doing surveillance for firearms, according to the speakers. It's important to know who's armed in your church, said Sergeant Gene Enley, who is commander of the Littleton SWAT team. Churches that may someday have SWAT teams. It's quite the amazing thing. So you're going to
die in the pulpit if someone pulls out a gun and shoots me. Yep.
All right. I don't know why I'm laughing about this because it's a very, very serious situation.
It is a serious topic, but I think we do a disservice when we allow ourselves to believe, first of all, that it is our responsibility to protect God's church. It's God's responsibility to protect God's church. And he is, in fact, in control. And he still is the Lord of the universe. And he will work all things together for our good. And I'm not sure how one preaches the gospel or shares the welcoming, forgiving nature of Jesus, where he had said to someone who is considered pond scum like Matthew, come follow me, if you first go through a metal detector and then are patted down and then you're allowed to sit in the pew we assign so that you don't get together with someone else who might be a little who might cause you to get a little violent or might be planning something. Where's the gospel? Where is the welcome? Where is the love of the Lord if we are so afraid of each other that we cannot share a room, much less our faith, our forgiveness, our compassion?
You know, I was in a worship service here not too long ago, within the last 6 months, right in the middle of the worship service. The pastor is in the pulpit preaching his sermon, and an individual walked into the church. There are three aisles, one in the middle and one on either side, walked all the way up to the front of the church, across the pews on the left side of the church, down the middle, found somebody, asked a couple of questions, as if they were in the middle of the mall, and then walked out. And I talked to some people afterwards, and everybody was thinking the same thing. Is something bad going to happen here? It was alarming, Pastor.
I'm sure it was.
And while it was happening, my otherwise fairly scrambled brain, which was trying to focus on what the pastor was preaching about, suddenly confronted with, is this a threat? should we be on guard here, or whatever? And then pretty much then it was over. I almost felt guilty for thinking it, but I couldn't help but think it. That's the day and age we live in.
No, I would have probably had the same thought. Except if I was preaching, I might have stopped and said, can I help you? Because, you know, here's a thought for any of you who are listening, who are wondering, you know, what would I do if I really needed to get in touch with someone during church? Those guys who stand at the back who are called ushers, if you tapped one of them and said, do you know where so-and-so is sitting? They could probably get you to them faster if it was an emergency.
Maybe. Maybe not.
Strikes me as common courtesy.
All right. Okay. Enough about that. I have another question for you. Because I've long made this case, and I think it's a valid assertion. The media, as you are no doubt aware, is not very friendly to the Christian faith or to the Christian perspective on God. As a matter of fact, you don't have to work too hard to find hostility toward Christianity in the media. But it never ceases to amaze me that whenever there's a disaster, and then the reporters for the television stations fan out into the disaster area, and there are people out there looking at what was left of their home because it's been carried off by a flood or it's been blown apart by a tornado or whatever, it doesn't take very long, and pretty soon somebody will be on camera saying, well, you know, we're just thanking God that we're all alive, we're offering prayers of thanksgiving because we found all of our family and friends, or, you know, they start talking God talk.
Mm-hmm.
So with the flooding that's been going on here in the Midwest, two of the websites that I go to, one of them has a picture from an Iowa location, downtown city in Iowa, and there is flood water going right down the street. Everything is underwater in terms of the street. The trees are sticking up out of the water. And underneath the picture it says, at God's mercy. And then there is another website that I went to, and its headline is Midwest Overwhelmed by Epic 500-Year Flood. Time to Start Praying. And so I said to myself, well, there it is again. And now we have disaster, we have adversity on a large scale, and even the media plays the God card. What do you make of that?
Well, maybe, just maybe, they're beginning to catch it. You know, maybe the Lord is allowing these disasters to, in fact, remind us that though we think we're in charge of the world and we can create or end global warming or global cooling or whatever is actually going on.
You really think media people think that?
No.
Oh.
But I think that some of the folk are beginning to understand that there are things beyond our control. Man is not the center of the universe.
Well, obviously we can't control floods.
Exactly. And God has used floods before to wake up the folk and to bring about change.
Let's take up this question on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Bible Study. I'm Chuck Rathard. Pastor Richard Moore is with us here today. He is pastor at St. Martin Lutheran Church in Winona, Minnesota. We'll be right back.
I'm Diane Summers.
And I'm Steve Siegel. Join us on the next afternoon show. We'll talk to Dr. Brian Salmon and about the new culture of hooking up on college campuses.
Pat Fick and Joni Harwell talk about can-do missions.
And we'll talk to the Holy Smokers.
Okay.
I wonder what they do.
I don't know. We'll find out.
We'll find out on the next afternoon show, right here from 3 till 6 on AM 850 KFUO.
You can hitch a ride for a trip to the Creation Museum and Kings Island near Cincinnati, Ohio, August 5th and 6th. You're invited to join fellow youth from the Central Illinois area for an exciting and informative journey. The deadline for reservations is June 30th. Send your registration and payment of $150 to Pastor Thomas Moyer. You can call for a registration form, 217-851-9077.
Are evolutionists questioning their own theory? Get the answer next on today's Creation Moment. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
When we read biology textbooks or watch television programs about science and discovery, we are led to believe that evolution is not a theory, but a scientifically established fact. We are told with great confidence how life first arose on ancient Earth, or when each species first evolved, and the precise evolutionary relationships between different creatures. And of course, the impression is given that all of this is established beyond question. But is that what scientists themselves are telling each other behind the closed walls of academia? In 2005, the scientific journal Science celebrated its 125th anniversary. As part of their celebration, they listed 125 questions that science has not answered. One of the questions was, how and where did life on Earth arise? Apparently, scientists have not established the origin of life as a fact. Another question they said that science has not answered was, what determines specific diversity? If this question has not been answered by science, how can science describe the history of the various species and their evolutionary relationships? It would seem that the origin and evolution of life are not scientifically established facts, despite how these are portrayed in textbooks and on television. These godless and fraudulent claims, made for what is still a theory of evolution, should not be allowed to deceive us and our children.
For a free copy of our Creation Resource Catalog, visit our website at creationmoments.com or call us toll-free at 1-800-42-BIBLE. And be sure to join us next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
Hi, Phyllis Wallace here, totally up for introducing you to Dr. Richard Swenson on the next Woman to Woman show. We'll look at the overload syndrome. Dr. Swenson is a full-time futurist, physician, researcher, and educator who wrote Margin, the Can't Put It Down book on overcoming overload. You'll wonder, why didn't I think of that? But he did, so you and I can. Seriously, we both need this one. Next time, Woman to Woman.
Saturday mornings at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Celebrate the 4th of July holiday at the historic Missouri Botanical Garden, Friday, July 4th from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. Admission to the garden is free for all visitors. The children's garden is also free all day long. Stroll through 79 acres of beautiful landscaping and historic structures. Stop to smell the roses at peak bloom or feed the hungry koi fish in the authentic Japanese garden. For more information, visit mobot.org.
You listen to the Bible study. If you'd like to raise an issue, go in a different direction, our numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Before we went to the break, we're talking with our guest, Pastor Richard Moore, who is pastor at St. Martin Lutheran Church in Winona, Minnesota. Disasters have the effect, apparently, of demonstrating to all of us, even those of us who don't believe in God very much or don't think about Him very much, that there are certain conditions and situations where we are just not capable of affecting the outcome that we would like to affect. I would imagine, Pastor Moore, that there's a lot of praying going on around levees in Iowa and northern Missouri, levees that have water lapping up against the top of them, and people wondering whether or not they're going to hold. I bet they're praying hard, don't you think?
Absolutely. And the Lord will hear the prayer, and He will act in a way that is truly best for the people.
And if you're praying and maybe even some of the pastors in the surrounding towns, they come out to the levees and they pray out loud, openly, and that levee breaks. What's God trying to tell them?
Well, that'd be really easy for me to answer if my name was Jesus. But see, I'm not God.
Then you'd be Jesus Moore.
Oh, there's a frightening thought. I'm not God. I can't tell you what God's trying to tell someone or a community in any given situation merely by my going, oh, there's a flood. He must be telling them this. But we as individuals, as we look at our lives and as we are called upon by God, know that we are sometimes allowed to endure suffering to bring us back to trusting in God, turning to God to bring us back to being better stewards of what he has given us. We need to, when we are questioning what's God telling me, search our hearts and God's word and look for what he's telling me. Sometimes in our lives, what God is telling us doesn't become clear for decades, but it then becomes clear.
You know, there were a handful of very prominent American clergymen who said in the wake of the Katrina disaster that God had punished New Orleans and its environs because of the no shortage of decadence that goes on in some quarters of that city down there. And if you follow that logic and you're standing on a levee that breaks somewhere in Iowa or Missouri, then you might be in a position to say, well, I wonder what we did that God decided to be so hard on us.
That's why we don't follow that position.
We don't follow that position. What position do we follow?
We follow the position that where Scripture clearly tells us what God is doing or has done. We believe it, know it, can confess it. Otherwise, it is not my place to, unless the Lord comes to me and says, this is my word, go out and speak this word to the nation. Okay? I can't say New Orleans was flooded because of the decadence there. If we follow that, why is L.A. still standing? Where's God's flood for New York City? Or for that matter, St. Louis or Winona? Show me where there are no sinners.
Well, that's why your bridge fell in the water up there, Pastor.
Yeah, but that was Minneapolis, not Winona.
Well, it's, you know, it's
but my enough. Point is, show me where there is no sinners. If there are no sinners somewhere, then they can anticipate that the Lord, that by that logic, that the Lord will bless them. But everybody else better start ducking cover. That is not what Scripture says. You can't, you don't get to look at what happens in nature and say, I am sure this is God's judgment on you. I might look at what happens in my life and say, I am sure this is God's judgment on me, because what has happened to me is the direct result of something I have done that is in violation of his law. Then I can do that, because then Scripture supports it. Otherwise, you are out there blaspheming. You are crediting evil to God.
Wouldn't want to do that.
It's not a good idea.
It's not a good idea. All right, I've got another story here I want to talk about. This is a little after the fact here. I should have done this before Father's Day, but I'm not always the most organized guy in the world. This is a story out of Escobedo, Mexico. You ever been to Escobedo, Pastor Moore?
Nope.
That's pretty far from Winona, Minnesota. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, I would assume.
It's in northern Mexico, and the men in this northern Mexican town are likely to have, or should have been likely to have, I guess, a happy Father's Day, thanks to the mayor, because the mayor in Escobedo, Mexico, was handing out free Viagra and condoms. You get the Father's Day connection there? Mayor.
Not really.
Mayor Margarita Martinez says the handouts are part of a campaign aimed at raising awareness about male health problems. Martinez says a strong family, quote, requires a healthy man, and a healthy sex life is part of general health, unquote. The campaign includes a team of doctors and nurses who give free health exams and determine which men could be given the pills, which are donated by pharmacies. The handout, which was last Thursday, a week ago, was arranged to coincide with Father's Day. Security guards, they got security guards.
And absolutely.
And you don't. Security guard Jose Isabel Rico was among the recipients. Of course I'm going to use the pills, he said. We'll see what they do. So what do you think of the pre-Father's Day strategy down there in Escobedo, Mexico?
You've got me, and they said it couldn't be done. You have me speechless.
Well, this is a big day then.
That's ridiculous.
It's Father's Day.
And, yeah, and the point is?
Well, that's what I was hoping you could
tell me. If it's Father's Day, I'm sorry. If you really want to make a connection, don't hand out the condoms.
I'm not going there, but I point well taken.
It doesn't make any sense to me. First of all, I do not understand governments, especially towns, that think somehow they should be encouraging, creating, I don't know, making happen people's sex lives.
Well, that's the point here, and that's the issue that I wanted to raise with you. It is amazing to me how, in America anyway, and this is in Mexico, how we are seemingly on this determined path to sexualize everything, including now, at least down in Mexico, Father's Day. We have Father's Day because there was an understanding of this. I just found this to be amazing.
Yeah.
An excuse to sexualize.
To hand out, to sexualize yet again another thing.
But even while that's in some ways kind of amusing, I guess, and maybe can make you chuckle, and apparently make Pastor Moore speechless, this sexualizing of every corner and every vestige of our lives and our culture, I think that's going to pose problems for you, Pastor.
It already has.
Yeah, okay.
It already has.
How?
I have, well, a relatively large congregation and a number of people wanting to get married. Okay? I received an email last week from one of the members of my congregation. She has just graduated college. She and her fiancé are all set to get married in September. Life is wonderful. She emailed me to ask me whether I thought it would be a problem if he and she moved in together for the last 3 months before they got married.
Interesting question.
Because, well, it seems to be much more relaxed nowadays in society, and it would be more convenient for
them.
And
you can save a lot of money that way, Pastor.
And it would be more convenient for them. Now, this is a girl who starts off by saying, I still believe that there shouldn't be premarital sex in this email. But wouldn't it be okay if we just shared an apartment, the one we're going to move into after we're married?
And Pastor Moore said,
what's the possibility of you doing that the 3 months before you're married and continuing to hold your belief in no premarital sex?
Oh, no problem, Pastor.
Right. Excuse me. I'm just, you know, I understand that hopefully the reason that she felt confident doing this is that she feels she can talk to me and be very open and honest, and I think that's good. But there's something bizarre about asking your pastor whether it would be okay if you just moved in with
Why?
Your fiancé.
Why is that?
Because
so
after all, everyone else is doing it.
Everything is relaxed.
Right.
Except the Amen Before Father's Day down in Escobedo, Mexico.
Well, but that's because they've gotten help with the bill.
I understand.
Sorry.
So what did you say? Did you...
I told you what I told her.
Did you write back?
This is not a good idea. That this, first of all, it sends a witness to people who know that she is an active member of a congregation and a Christian that they're going to assume something is happening, whether it is or not. Secondly, you're putting yourself in temptation in a way that, you know, we're supposed to flee temptation, not embrace it.
Were you disappointed, Pastor, that she asked you the question?
No, not disappointed. Disappointed that she felt she needed to?
Yeah, disappointed that somebody who has Christian faith, and I guess...
Christian education
would not have enough clarity...
To know the answer.
To know the answer that...
Right. But the other side of that is I certainly do not want to scare anyone away from asking their pastor if they're having questions like that.
Yeah, the reality there is that while you have probably, or her pastors have probably been a very strong voice as to how that question should be answered, the rest of the week... She's being told something else everywhere she looks.
Yep.
And that's why it's a problem for you, Pastor. That's why... This business down in Escobedo, Mexico, is a problem for you. I hope they didn't make any pre-marriage trips down to Escobedo. Let's take some telephone calls here, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's kind of an amusing ask the pastor here today on this Thursday. Hi, Linda. You're on the Bible study.
Hi. I have kind of a comment from or a question from the last half hour where, you know, they were talking about having an armed guard in the church and things like that, and Pastor
right.
Moore said to trust in God, and he wouldn't do that. And I'm not saying that he's wrong or anything like that. I'm just all this kept coming into my mind. What about the guy who, you know, the story goes that a flood was coming and they said, we want to evacuate you. And he says, no, I'm trusting in God. And then the water comes and the boat comes and he says, they want to rescue me. He says, no, I'm trusting in God. And then.
Okay, but, you know, the second or third time someone comes in and shoots up my sanctuary, I'll probably change my
mind. Okay, and I wasn't knocking that.
That's my point. My point is that this does not happen. Okay, yes, it has happened. But it happened, the number of times this sort of incident has happened up against the number of times there are a group of people gathered together in a public place for worship means that it is completely statistically irrelevant.
Okay.
If we, for instance, made you put a warning on milk caps, the little plastic cap on the milk, because it is possible that you could drop it on the floor, slip on it, slide through a stained glass window, end up in a pool and drown. So therefore we should put a warning on milk caps that says, may lead to drowning. You see what I'm saying?
It
happens so infrequently. That's different than standing in the middle of a flood.
There are some communities that are not quite as quiet and peaceful as Winona, Minnesota.
But we're talking about inside churches during worship. Even in the roughest parts of America, and I've been to some of them, inside worship churches during worship, there is not a large number or even a statistically relevant number of times a person has been shot or threatened with a gun.
Well, let me ask you this, Pat. Linda, is that your question?
I'm not picking on you, Linda. It just strikes me, you know, I understand, you know, that people are naive. I'm trusting, I don't have the money to pay my mortgage. I'm trusting God to come up with it. It's going to appear on the table. I mean,
okay.
I understand what you're saying, but this isn't the same situation.
I wasn't necessarily disagreeing with you. I just, that kept popping in my head,
sure.
And I just wanted to hear what your response would be. So thank you very much.
Nice. You're welcome.
And you know what, Pastor Moore, one of the keys here is that maybe it's not so much about how statistically insignificant these occurrences are, but maybe in the minds of some, Linda and me for two, it's how final that rarest of events is. In the end, you got a dead person or...
Absolutely.
You know, do you ever watch Major League Baseball, Pastor?
Yeah.
Have you noticed this year that all the first and third base coaches there in the major leagues, they all have to wear helmets?
Yep.
They are all wearing helmets because a coach in the minor league
died.
Took a foul ball shot off the noggin and it killed him.
Right.
And now if you say to yourself, well, now how many foul ball shots have there been in the last 130 years of professional baseball?
Mm-hmm.
Statistically, it's pretty close to zero.
Right.
But one guy got killed by one line drive, and now we have helmets in there.
And do you know why that is? It's because we are under the impression that we can control every freak occurrence that happens. We can protect ourselves from every illness, from every injury, from every tripping. And if by somehow you get injured, you should be able to blame someone for failing to take care of you.
You know who hates this rule the most?
The people who have to do it.
That's right. These coaches.
Not only that, I think it's a completely reasonable thing to put out a warning that says, you know, this happened. Be careful while you're out there. We'd recommend a helmet if you're concerned at all. That's different than making a rule that says everybody now has to be protected from this freak occurrence.
I look forward to the day when you walk into St. Martin Lutheran Church there in Winona, Minnesota, and greeted by a sign that says, our ushers are armed, so don't do anything that you shouldn't do while you're in worship here today. Okay. All right, let's take this call from James. Hi, James.
I wouldn't arm my ushers.
You're on the Bible study. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning, James. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I read the Matthew 10 and 16 passage, and to me it's saying as a Christian in culture we are to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves.
Mm-hmm.
So, Pastor, I'd like for you to get Romans 16:17-20. And is there any connection as to how this passage can be used to navigate the culture as a Christian.
Romans what?
16:17-20. I urge you, brothers, to watch out for those.
Well, you picked the perfect guy, because when Pastor Moore was here, we always gave him Romans 16.
That's right. I have taught Romans 16 probably 14 times on the radio.
All right, thank you.
And you know, Pastor, if you do have time after giving me that passage, mm-hmm. What is the meaning of simple in Greek? I'm having a little problem here understanding what simple means.
In which context?
In the passage, it mentions simple twice. I want to know what it actually is in the Greek.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Pastor?
Okay. Let's first read Matthew 16:17 and following. I urge you, brothers, to watch out for those who cause divisions and put obstacles in your way that are contrary to the teaching that you have learned. Keep away from them. For such people are not serving our Lord Christ, but their own appetites. By smooth talk and flattery, they deceive the minds of naive people.
Is that the simple?
That's the simple.
Okay.
Everyone who has heard about your obedience, and so I am full of joy over you, but I want you to be wise in what is good and innocent about what is evil. The God of peace will soon crush Satan under your feet. The grace of the Lord be with you.
So that's okay. The connection to Matthew.
The connection to Matthew is that we are to be wise about what is good and innocent or simple about what is evil. We are to not, you know, we are to not be naive about what's going on in the world. But we are not to be overwhelmed by it. We are not to be sucked into it. Wise as serpents, we need to know what's out there. But we need to be about separating ourselves from it. Watch out for those who cause division and put obstacles in your way contrary to the teaching you have learned. We separate ourselves from those who are forwarding that which is not biblical truth as truth, are forwarding ways of dealing with each other that are not based on God's mercy and forgiveness and grace. But we don't do it in such a way that says, hey, shoot me. But we allow ourselves to live as his children, assured of his grace. And, you know, those verses that end there in verse 20, the God of peace will soon crush Satan under your feet. We have the promise that God will protect us. We are already victors over Satan because Jesus died for us. He will not be victorious.
The word simple here, I guess, is translated naive.
Once it's translated naive and once it's translated innocent. Okay, smooth talk and flattery, they deceive the minds of naive people, people who don't actually evaluate what they're hearing. The worst thing you can do as a Christian is go to church or turn on the radio and listen to someone who's supposedly preaching and not evaluate it against the Word of God. We are supposed to listen. We're supposed to listen believing that the person there is doing what he's supposed to do, and we're supposed to check him and make sure he's right.
The thing I'm struggling with here, and it's a good question from James, I guess his translation is simple.
Yeah, both in both places.
If I were to read this, had read Romans 16, and innocent as to what is evil, I would think, I would have just understood the word innocent there to be not guilty, to be found not guilty about evil things.
Right, but not participate in.
But there's a difference between being not guilty and being naive. Naive is almost like uninformed as opposed to not guilty.
Yeah, but those are two different contexts. He's talking about people who are driven driven away by smooth talking people who are intentionally trying to trick them when he says naive. Down below, he's talking about being innocent, not participating in the evil of the day. So we are supposed to not only not participate in what is evil, which is to be simple in regards to the evil, that is to reject it, or be innocent, That's the use of the word there in Greek. In the first verse where it says not to be driven away or deceived by smooth talk and flattery, it's talking about people who are naively just accepting what anyone says to them.
So when it comes to conceal and carry in church worship services, how do we honor
these verses?
Wise as serpents and innocent as doves?
You're aware of it. You do not ignore that it may become an issue. You maybe even discuss it, but you do not become part of it. Remain innocent to what is evil.
Do you think that the people who, in this congregation where these shootings took place in Colorado, who then formed this organization, which is designed to help other congregations, you know, develop security plans and all that stuff, do you think that they are out of sync with this part of the scriptures?
I think that probably what's going on there, and this is way too judgmental because I don't know who I'm talking about, but I'm going to go out on a limb. It said it was a mega church?
Yep.
Okay. I'm questioning whether or not the focus of that worship and the focus of that gathering is Christ. Because if, in fact, forgiveness and grace are being preached and taught there, I would think that the response wouldn't be first to arm ourselves, but to pray for the family of the person who was involved if he didn't survive it, and to help people understand how the Lord would have us respond to evil. Jesus, you also may recall, said, if someone slaps one cheek, turn the other cheek. He didn't say, go learn jiu-jitsu and take him out.
and get a .38.
Right.
That's true. Pastor Moore, it's good to talk to you. Thank you for spending some time with us here. Don't hang up, because Diane is waiting, and she wants to see if she can schedule you for an Ask the Pastor program in July. So I'm going to put you on hold, okay?
All right. Blessings.
Thank you so much for the time here today. And that is our Ask the Pastor Hour here on our Bible study program. We will be engaged with our Friday dialogue. Tomorrow we will pick up Hebrews chapter 8. Pastor David Boyce Clare, who is pastor at Faith Lutheran Church in Velda City and Bethesda Lutheran Church in Pine Lawn, will be our guest. And we're looking forward to visiting with Pastor Stephen Hauer, our good friend, pastor at St. John Lutheran Church in Ellisville, for our Ask the Pastor Hour. Thank you for the phone calls, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Listen to Chuck Rathard and guests Monday through Friday at the same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the Internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of The Bible Study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible Study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.